Hi there, and welcome to Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett on Empower Radio. I appreciate you tagging along for the ride. Always have some fascinating people to talk to, you know, daily, wherever you are. There is somebody right in your vicinity who has a fascinating story. And the thing about my life is I get a little prods and hints and tips and just fall into some wonderful conversations with some wonderful people. Today, we're going to go into the shamanic realm and check out ways that you can empower your thinking, your creativity, your own natural abilities to check into what would be a better and possibly more coherent way of navigating your life story. Change your life. You can do that. Really easy, simple. The book, Change Your Story, Change Your Life, Carl Greer, is with us today. He's going to talk about how he's done this, or he can advocate and help and assist you doing this. And the aspect he brings to it is the shamanic dreaming. And I really love that aspect because it gives you a freedom that other avenues don't. Hi there, Dr. Greer. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, my pleasure, Wendy.
Now, I'm going to let you do the background on this because you know where you've been and what you've done better than I do.
All right.
Even if I read your stuff.
Well, so, I've been involved in the shamanic realms for a number of years, and also in the psychological realms for even longer. And a couple of things have occurred to me over that time period. One is that many people are very spiritual, and they have powerful spiritual experiences, but they don't always translate those experiences into changes that work for them in their everyday life. So that was one thing that I have been aware of. The other thing is that many people have stories that seem to be living them. In other words, they don't seem to have control over their stories. And so I decided to write this book where I'm suggesting ways that people can engage their lives and their stories so that they have the possibility to change them.
Okay, when you're talking about the shamanic element, who have you studied with and what was that like? Because every single teacher is unique and you always get an extraordinary, I think, insight from each one and then connect your own dots. Who were the powerful teachers that you learned from?
I've been interested in shamanism for probably most of my life, but I never felt I could just pull up stakes and apprentice with somebody for a year or so. And so I kind of put that part of my life on hold until about 15 years ago. My wife had given me Alberto Villoldo's book, Shaman, Healer, Sage, which I read. And I was interested in it, and it seemed like there would be ways that I could fit that into my life to do some studying and training. So I started with Alberto. He's become a friend. We've done many things over the years together. I taught at his school. And then I've spent a lot of time down in Peru working with a number of Peruvian shamans. And I go down there quite frequently and have deep friendships with some of them. And another very close friend is a Blackfoot elder up in Canada. And he and his wife and I have done things as well in the shamanic realms. And I've had the opportunity to travel and spend time with shamans in Mongolia and Australia and Ethiopia. So I've had a variety of experiences, but as I've gotten more down the path, Wendy, a lot of the experiences I have are just me connecting in best ways that I can myself with spirit.
When you're doing this work, and a lot of it is visualization and kind of trying to, in the best way, disconnect with the programming that we have been pretty much indoctrinated into during our lives, and very much of it Western culture formatting of go to school, have a family, have a career, and the perfect life will be there for you if you follow all of those rules. Right. When you step into the shamanic realm, that's totally different.
It is. It's different in a couple of ways. One, it relativizes all those things you said. Do they become as important to you as they were? Secondly, let's say you get stuck in those paths, and you want to change, it's hard just with your will and intent sometimes to change. But my belief, and I've seen it work enough times that I've had it, for me at least, proven, if you can go to transpersonal places through shamanic work or Jungian work, I'm a Jungian analyst, and I have a certain appreciation of some of those ideas as well. If you can go to some of those places, you can get information and energy that helps you make changes that your ego consciousness isn't always able to just do by the dint of your will.
What's the most difficult part when you're disengaging, when you're trying to basically you are reforming your own idea about self?
It's very scary because you wonder, you know, if I'm not who I've been, who am I and who will I be? And I've seen that's one of the real hindrances that people have in wanting to change. They just say, you know, the devil I know is better than the devil that I don't know. And it's a leap of faith that a lot of people are afraid to make.
Does it help to have some therapy first?
You know, I think therapy is very important for many people, and certainly therapy in conjunction with shamanic work is often very useful. The shamanic ideas that I have, Wendy, and training that I've had is that we have kind of multiple ways of engaging life. We have our physical bodies, we have our psychological, emotional, mental bodies, we have our soul bodies, and we have just the aspect of ourselves as pure energy. And if you do healing at any one of those realms, there's reverberations at the others, but let's just say you're going to do a shamanic healing at the realm of the energetic that will allow changes to take place at the psychological, the physical, and the soul, but you still have to do the work. You still have to do the day-to-day work of making the changes and in this moment doing something differently than you otherwise might have done in the past. So I think, yes, therapy can help. Shamanic work can help prime the pump and make things possible that perhaps wouldn't have been without the work.
Now, to give somebody an idea of how this might work in your book, I thought this was so profound that you started off with the shamanic dream of basically disconnection.
Yeah. And
could you share that? Because that is a perfect starting point, a jumping off point into the next, you know, transitioning and growing and evolving from there.
Well, you know, many years ago, this is, I think, even before my shamanic work had happened, but my psychological training to become a Jungian analyst was starting. I had a dream that I was going to be in a judo tournament, and the players, the competitors, didn't have their own heads. And so I had this dream that we had to find a head that fit us, and somebody sewed one on to me, and it was painful, and this person that was interacting with me around the head. We had some adventures, but I ultimately woke up and I just realized that how disconnected I had been, you know, from parts of myself, and that this person that was helping me was me, and how important it was to get remembered, you know, we put back together again. And that's been something that I think about, that a lot of this shamanic and spiritual work is just to remember that at some level, you know, we know these things, but we forget them. So that's why that dream was so important to me.
Oh, I love it. I love it because it puts all the parts out there and says that that's, it basically was a precursor to all of this that transpired. And so I really, really appreciate that this was something you could tap into and you remembered. Some people, when they do this work, they forget to journal, they forget to dialogue, they forget to document, and it's just lost in the ether unless something triggers it. For the most part, though, these are stories that help, in a way, help pretty much seal the deal and weave that tapestry of where I have come from, where I'm going, and where I am. I love that. I love.
Absolutely. I think to remember it by putting it down in writing is very, very helpful, because you go back sometimes 3 years, say, boy, you know, I didn't get it at the time, but now it makes sense to me.
Well, it plays out. It finally plays out, and you're filling in the dots and connecting things that before were so quantum that you couldn't, you were too close to it. And then you go back and you've gone through, oh, wow, here it was. It was all laid out. Now, the other thing you talk about is becoming closer to source as you do this work.
I guess we all evolve a certain worldview as to how things are. And my worldview is that before the Big Bang, you know, there was something. You know, I call it, and I've experienced it in journeys that I've taken, I call it the quiet. And I would say that's source, where everything is possible. It's before the idea, before the form of the idea, before the idea got energized. Everything is pure potential. And that source has certain characteristics that I've learned to believe. And it really is, it's life, it's energy, and it's love. And so from this oneness, everything has come. And we and plants and animals and energies that we don't see all come from it. So if we can learn to relate to these aspects of source other than us, we can get, again, information and energy that helps us with our own story, recognizing that everything has that essence, that source essence within it, including us. And so we're all part of that one, and then the one is all part of the many. And so that's how I myself think about that one.
We're talking with Dr. Carl Greer, and the book is called Change Your Story, Change Your Life. You've laid it out very well in terms of giving people an idea. They don't have to have an assist in doing this. The book is laid out so you can do your own shamanic journeying. You can do your own transpersonal work. But it is a process. So this isn't about, you know, an instant overnight epiphany and, oh, poof, here I am, my new story. Some of it's going to involve just a little bit of aching and paining.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Or a lot, depending on how your viewpoint is.
Yeah.
What was the hardest part for you in doing some of this, letting go of, you know, of maybe some former priorities that had seemed so important before you started?
Oh, it's, just taking time to sit down and really realize with what is, you know, for me, and I've seen this with others as well, you know, what is your story? Because there's a story that you'd like other people to see and the story you'd like it to be, but then there really is a, you know, the story as it is. And you need to start with that, as painful as it is. And I have a series of exercises and ways to look at yourself. And then once you've done that, you have to start saying, would I like it to be different? And for myself, I said, yeah, there's a lot of areas that I would have liked it to be different. I'd like it to be different. And then I have to ask myself, well, why isn't it? You know, if you want it to be this way and it's not, why don't you just do it? Well, I'll do it when I, you know, make a little bit more money or the kids get out of, you know, high school or, you know, whatever the reasons are that we have for not doing something, get resolved, which unless we do something actively, I find they usually don't get resolved. So those are some of the things that I found, that you have a certain inertia. And what happened when I did the shamanic and Jungian work and going to these transpersonal places, it just loosens things up. It gives you a new perspective, new ideas that work in ways that are really not describable, but they do seem to work because I believe that everything is connected to everything else. Our unconscious parts really do influence our thoughts and our actions, and so it's a loosening up by engaging ourselves in a larger set of energies that can be helpful to us.
The way I describe some of the shamanic work, and I want to ask you more about shamanism or shaman in a minute, but when I started doing a lot of this intuitive and out-of-body guidance, working with spirit guides, that kind of thing, I had these tremendous visions as part of the process, and one of them involved being in a boxing ring with an incredibly enormous, if he opened his mouth, he could swallow me alive, snake.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, and I had opened the door and gone in because I was somehow invited to go into this particular arena, and the snake is facing me, more, you know, kind of a cobra type thing, a being very, very intent and imposing, and he looked at me And he said, "Are you afraid of me?" And I thought, well, that's an odd thing. And I said, no, because I don't have a fear of snakes. For animals and other beings, I have a respect. And that was my automatic autopilot response. And it said, "You should be." I'm like, well, that was arrogant. And I looked. And I just left the arena and thought, I'll have to pay attention. And it basically was a setting for a very powerful individual who came into my life that I had to kind of learn a different way of being present without being intimidated or bowled over by an extremely powerful personality.
Yes.
But that's what it meant for me.
So it gave you a precursor to a ordinary life experience that had you not had the precursor, you might not have acted as effectively as you did. Would that be fair?
I would have been more intimidated and more blown away by the intense strength and charisma of that individual. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. But it was a dream, and it was a vision, and it was the intensity of it that got my attention and made me bookmark it and know that this was basically when you get into archetypes, that this was a message from another realm.
Absolutely. And some of the things that I think are useful, and I talk about it in the book, are with that type of an image, dialoguing with it. You know, what why are you showing up this way? What message do you have for me? What do you want from me? Then you ask it messages, and then you can say, how can I, you know, serve you? Because the unconscious has given you a gift of this image. And then you could do the same thing with the boxing ring. You know, why a boxing ring? So I think if a person can start to work with these things that seem, at the first level, very scary, like, boy, a snake. You know, some people don't like snakes. But somehow they have a relationship with it. It can change things in ways that are very powerful.
Well, part of it, too, is, you know, the snake for me represented the source and the creation, whether it was negative or positive, was up to me to determine, and my reactions would then, change that. But if I just stood, and this was the challenge, to stand on my truth and develop and follow my own sense of integrity and not be swayed by that, the powerful events that would come in my, you know, that I would be faced with. So dialoguing, and there were three or four other instances where that image was a part of this. And snake is that old wisdom, that old, you know, that old sense of this is really old stuff you're working on, or I was working on with karma. So, but at the same time, I'm going and saying, this is my way of dealing with this. When you're dealing with people and they have these different images and you're talking about something that might be frightening, how do you get beyond the fear when you're in a realm that's totally foreign and all of a sudden you're plopped down here and you have to think your way out or intuit your way out? How do you deal with the fear?
When I'm doing shamanic work with them, or if I'm suggesting they do it themselves, I always say open sacred space, however you think about that, where you're bringing in your protectors, the energies of the directions, and I have a certain set of connections in those realms that I bring in, and I offer those to other people, but suggest they can have their own. You talked about having guides. You know, you bring in guides to protect the space. And then
yes.
I say you do a preparatory work by, you know, some breathing, or try to clear your field, then you're ready to engage. It can be done very, very quickly. And then when you have something that's very scary, like you're talking about, I really believe in this dialoguing process where you somehow, with your consciousness, become it. It came to you for some purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a purposefulness in all these things. And you become it through a process which I describe, and we can talk about if you want, and then let it, through your voice, answer. So you would ask it, okay, Cobra, why have you appeared? And then you become it, and as the Cobra, you answer Wendy's question. And then the Cobra is speaking, and you, at some faculty within yourself, you listen, and you come back to Wendy. The reason I think we can do that, Wendy, is that I think we all contain multiple parts. You know, there's the, you know, for me, there's the father and the, you know, the husband and the business guy and the writer and the shaman and whatever else, and the guy who sometimes feels little and sometimes feels inflated, and to engage those parts respectfully, recognizing that ultimately we, from our Carlness or the Wendiness, can make a decision if we want to tolerate if they're abusive. I think it loosens things up, and so to your question, I would relate to those fearful things by a dialoguing process, which is relational.
All right. So let me bring through something that would help in terms of what that might have been the answer for. That which doesn't kill me makes me stronger. Usually when you're talking about a powerful individual or entity that has a poisonous bite, there might be, the fear of getting bitten, and or the fear of enlightenment, or the fear of going forward when the situation is unclear. And there in that message is transmutation. What I was given in that particular lesson was resilience, knowing that I could, that I was powerful, that I had the ability, that I was learning and I was growing, and not to end with my first reaction, but to continue to involve my interaction and understand the lesson and the need for that dynamic in my life to help me work on my backbone.
You stayed in the interaction. You stayed and it made all the difference.
I didn't run. But see, that work I'm just spelling out, that's that instantaneous vision that all of this stuff happens and then it plays out. And you don't know the entire scenario until you've lived it and integrated it into the waking reality.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So for you, when you work with a shaman, and this is something you address in your book, how do you know when one is authentic or has that integrity and they're working with you? Because you're giving your power away when you're allowing somebody else to help you format or reformat your hard drive, your own inner being, your source, your foundation. You're allowing them a hold.
You've got to trust your gut because, there's some people in these realms that are very powerful spiritually. I mean, they can make things happen, they can manifest things, but they haven't done their own psychological work. I mean, they abuse power and money and sexuality and alcohol and want to use people. I'm not saying they're all like that or that even many are, but some are, don't have the integrity that others, and you just have to be very careful that you don't give up your power and that you are discerning as much as you can be as to the ethics with which the person you're working with is being informed by.
I think part of it, too, is to allow that if that person gives you free will and says, this is not a mandatory process, you are able to do these things yourself, and I am not holding you hostage or your personal guru. I think the minute they allow themselves to be, rather than a staple in your life, an accessory, it gives you a clue that they're not dependent upon your approval or your continued money for their programs, for their own livelihood.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's part of the, that's well put the discerning process. I mean, if their goal, and you sense their goal, is to do the work as quickly as possible so that you are empowered to do the work yourself, as opposed to being in relationship to them where they're the healer and you're the healee for years, then that's not a good thing.
Sometimes it's difficult when we're wounded and we're needy and vulnerable to sense those boundaries. And I think with your book, when you're talking about change your story, change your life, this is a good template for giving you a sense of wholeness without even, just at the beginning. At the beginning, you get a nice frame of reference for beginning, middle, and end.
Well, thank you. Hopefully that's, that was my intent.
Okay, so when you're going into that sense of being close to source and connection at the beginning, because I really do think that is very powerful and very important when you're beginning to do these transpersonal and kind of existential outer limits work, because you're going to be in areas that are unfamiliar and you're calling this to you intentionally. All right, I want to get into the next segment with that sense of the perceptual levels and how we begin to change as we go into these different worlds. With that, is that a good connect, do you think?
Perfect.
Okay. So we're going to take a break. And again, you can see the first chapter of this if you would like. It's available. Change Your Story, Change Your Life. Using Shamanic and Jungian Tools to Achieve Personal Transformation. Carl Greer, Dr. Greer, is our guest today. And it's powerful work. And you can do it anytime, night, day, whatever age you are. That's the beauty of it. Start now and explore. So we'll get into this next element here, the lower world, middle world, upper world, all of that dynamic and how it plays into conscious creation. I'm Wendy Garrett. This is Conscious Living on Empower Radio.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called inventnow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the Insta-Do. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. Then you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's a helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's great.
Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude! What happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home. But these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over 1 million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
And the book is Change Your Story, Change Your Life. We're talking with Dr. Carl Greer, and it's about using shamanic and Jungian tools to achieve personal transformation. I love this because it's, for much of what I have been doing, I've been going in and out of the shamanic, let's see, not necessarily the realm, but that viewpoint. And it's a thing that you have to become comfortable working in non-traditional forms and areas. And then when you're doing this, you will get a result and a response and sometimes just be thrown into an environment in your dreams or in your wandering, your visioning, where you have to think your way and act your way and intuit your way out. So what we're doing in this book is developing a worldview or a comfortable program format, a foundation, a grounding to do the work, and then from there, reevaluate and review and reassert your story. Is that a good way or a decent way of putting that?
Yes. Yes, it is. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So when you're talking about shamans, basically they shift their energy and they increase it. They change the vibe. They shift and they're able to then change stories easier. And it's easy to work with a shaman and say, okay, here, do this for me. But what happens is you really want to be able to do it yourself. Yeah. And what are these lower, middle, and higher realms? What is this? What is this about?
Well, again, these are all classificatory schemes that you're trying to explain things that are hard to explain, but if they work, then people use them, and they work for a lot of people, and they work for me. The idea of the lower world is we have a place, maybe it's, they're all in our unconscious or linked to our unconscious, where our past lives, and maybe the past of our ancestors, and maybe the past of our reincarnated lives. And if we go down there with an intent, we can gain information about our past. And I describe a particular journey where we look at some of the wounds from our past that are impacting us presently. And we look at the deals we've made with life that are keeping us from really being fully present. And then we look at some of the energetic resources that are available to us, but for whatever reason we haven't brought back with us. And then we look at any kind of gift that Spirit will suggest to us on this journey that we can use to help transform our everyday life. And the last thing in the journey that I describe in my book is we interact with a power animal. And so if these energies, and it's always a respectful process, Wendy, we ask them, do they want to come back with us? And if they're willing to, then we bring them back and we try to integrate them into our lives. And the hope there is that if part of our present decision-making is hindered by things that we've not resolved in our past, if we can be freer from our past, then we can make a better present decision. And the same thinking goes, if we can hook up to a better future, that would be an upper world journey, than the one that we now have, that will influence us in our present decision-making. So part of the shamanic work is to be freer from the past and lined with a better future so that in the present we feel less trapped and we're better able to make choices that reflect the best for us in spirit in this lifetime. That's how I talk about it. That's how I think about it.
So, for instance, if somebody's having issues with healing and maybe suffered a traumatic injury or, you know, a real, very threatening life encounter and they're in the process of trying to reclaim the health they had before this happened, what would be a way to deal with that?
Well, so many ways. One would be to, with your ego consciousness, just kind of think about what else has been going on in your life in and around the time of this traumatic event, this illness. So you're starting to see how it fits into the larger picture. This is kind of an ego thing. You say, gee, you know, I lost my job, and my daughter got sick, and then this happened. Or when my parents divorced, it happened. Or whatever the life events are, you're starting to get a sense of how things fit. Then I suggest you actually dialogue with the illness and say, all right, why now? What message do you have for me? That's a start. And then when you do these lower world journeys, you may see what wound is somehow being expressed by the illness. What deal have you made with life that somehow allows that illness to stay or even come? And then what are the resources that are down there in your unconscious that can help you deal with, overcome, live with the illness? So that's how the shamanic worldview would be to think about it, that it's the illness is a manifestation of some energy that may have a soul aspect, a psychological aspect, a physical aspect, and just pure energy. And so you're trying to, through the processes in the book, look at it from all those different levels.
beauty of this is it creates the sense of being fluid and fluent. Nothing is stuck in stone unless you start to build a foundation around it and give it a home.
You got it. And you may want to give some of it a home because it works better than the other place where you've been living, but you don't want to get stuck there forever and ever.
So in some ways, you're basically establishing stepping stones on the path.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like the work when you're talking about working with the elements and working, bringing back a power animal, because that's a part of our environment that's always around us, and messages and images and influences come to us in the form of the familiar, whatever it is. And that familiar, you can use that in many different words. As I say that, it's like, oh yeah, multiple meanings.
Right, right.
But it's really, if you're in tune to this and you begin to open up your view and your awareness, so many things, if we're paying attention to those details, are available for us to pay attention to and incorporate into our knowing. It's just a wonderful way of being more present in reality.
And it, when you're in nature, which is a shamanic important part of their worldview, how important nature is. But when you're in nature, many things can happen. If you can start to feel that nature is observing us just like we're observing it, that's very transformative. And then if you think, hey, there is an interaction here, what message does the fact that that hawk came down right when I was thinking about such and such, what message does it have for me? And I suggest, rather than, looking up what hawk means from an animal book, ask the hawk, why did you come? What message do you have for me? And it's possible, I believe, to establish relationships with anything. And nature is a very powerful place to establish these relationships with.
And I love that. It's for me, those experiences with animals have been very profound awakenings. I went to Sedona, and a friend had helped me to go there. I didn't have any intention of doing that, but things were happening in my life. It was a profound cycle of change and just incredible, incredible spiritual growth and connection. And there I really connected with the animals. And as I was sitting on top of, there's an airport, the vortex by the airport there. And I was sitting there, and this little lizard came up beside me and sat beside me. And I realized, I knew this was a message. And so I sat very quietly and asked what the gift was. And then we had a little dialogue. And when it was done, then he just went on his way. But it was so clear, the beginning of the dialogue, the middle, the information, and the conversation that transpired. And then when it was concluded, then he left. And it was so, that was a very powerful time. And I would suggest, if you're, you're doing this kind of work, go to a sacred space, go to a space where you can quiet your mind and be receptive to information in non-traditional form. And you will see some amazing things. You'll feel, sense amazing things happening.
Yeah. And if you ever tried to, tell somebody, oh yeah, I'm going to sit in an airport and the lizard's going to give me a big message. A lot of people wouldn't get that. But in fact, when you actually are experiencing it, you say, this is really big.
Well, and a part of that too is to own your own insight and own your own truth and your own ability to intuit without going to somebody else's process, program, or formula, because it's all about you. Really,
absolutely.
We are here learning as individuals how to be more, amazingly enough, community beings. And when you were talking about the animals, if you have the respect for that animal also having a powerful viewpoint, insight, awareness, and a sense of being, then you give them dignity. You honor them. You value them as co-creators. And when they come to you, you don't want to end their life.
Absolutely.
So it's a learning process. And as you go, what are you talking about when you're getting into, directing your life and trying to change things? What happens when you start bringing these changes in and you may not be quite ready?
Well, life's a great teacher. You fall a couple of times and then you don't use those steps anymore. You go someplace else. And one of the reasons you may be ready, but those around you may not be ready for the change.
Bingo! Bingo!
And,
That's yeah, what you were talking like about. The that old, they're not going to appreciate that lizard chat you just had.
Right. Not the Wendy who's become different because of her chat with the lizard may not be the Wendy that people like or what.
She's a reptilian, man.
Yeah, right. And so you have to. It does take some courage. I mean, you're willing to do what you think is really best for you in spirit when some of the people in your circles don't want you to change.
Okay, we're going to jump ahead here because I've only got an hour, and you're listening, and you can get the book if you're wanting to do some details on this because it will help. But I wanted to get into the preparing for shamanic practices because I think this is essential. It really is a way of giving you a solid and sacred foundation so that you're in a state of a frame of mind that allows you to be agile. The luminous body. You talk about cleansing the luminous body.
I know that we all have an energy body that's encircling and around our physical bodies. And that body can pick up imprints that can influence us physically and psychologically. And so if we just, with our intent, because I really believe that energy follows intent, if with our intent we can scan ourselves, and then with our ability to visualize, see those places in our field that seem dark or discordant and not belonging or a little fragmented, have them change. Have them become light, have the fragments in our field become knit. And I think we can all learn to do this, Wendy. And it's a practice. And I have several other practices which I described to clear the field. So that's one of the preparation steps. Breathing is another.
Breathing.
And there's lots of different ways people, yoga, different traditions, Qigong, you know, have breathing practices. But I have a very simple one. And it just changes, it shifts us from our brain waves at a certain frequency to a little slower, slightly move to an altered state where we're more receptive, and brain chemistry, they talk about integrated processing that takes place when we move out of our frontal lobes more into the hind brain, the early brain. We just can integrate things better, and breathing, I think, can help us get there. And then I talk about opening sacred space, bringing in energies. We're respecting all these emissaries of source. We're asking them to help us with the work that we're about to do, and we do that with asking for their help, the four directions, and then honoring the earth, the mother, the benefactress of all that we have, and then all the sky spirits and the great spirit, the great mystery. And just in my own invocation, I always just give gratitude for being able to be here one more day to be part of the plan.
I think there's something also very powerful in the book that you're addressing when you say to be here for one more day. The ability to face death and to know that there is a very real power that has over you until you're willing to say, I didn't come into this expecting to be eternal. Everybody, everything, all life, all essence shifts form, and that for us is called death.
Yes. And amazing, people, I talk about it in my book and also in workshops that I've had where people journey to death. What is the message today that death has for you? And it's amazing how transformative that can be, because they doesn't always last, but it does change, and it has the potential for lasting. They have, from then on, a new relationship with death where death is more of an ally to give them information about things. What needs to die in my life? What do I need to get rid of in order to have more vitality while I'm here in this body? There's so many ways they can get information that are not normally accessible to our conscious mind by these journeys, and journeys to death are very powerful.
Well, and that's the thing. A lot of people who've had these near-death experiences come back more revitalized and rejuvenated and renourished and refreshed and encouraged. That, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow. Hallelujah. This is awesome.
You know, absolutely.
So if you don't, you know, you don't want to do the near-death thing, which I strongly advocate keeping that at bay if possible,
right,
unless it's part of your journey you've already signed up for it, you can do that in a different way, and the shamanic practice helps you do that.
Yes, it does.
Okay, now, have you done any of the enhanced experiences with either the pharmacological or the other assistants that go into these realms? Have you done any of that?
I have.
Okay, and what would your best advice be in terms of that?
First of all, you don't have to do it to have these experiences. I've had experiences with sacred plants, and I've had experiences without them, and they are often very similar. But if you're going to, if you feel called to do the sacred plants, you should do it in a place where it's legal with somebody. And here again, you have to trust your judgment that it's going to hold the space for you that has integrity.
Well, see, that I want you to address that because right now there's a lot of interest. It's a very seductive thing, and people are, it's a fad. It's becoming more the next trend of going to South America, experiencing ayahuasca, and oh, wow, yeah, yeah. But my experiences, none of them have involved any kind of enhancement. It's just unfolded, and the more work I did, the bigger and more, I guess, profound some of these journeys without doing any of that extra. So I want people to know that it is possible without that, and I like the fact that you have done it both ways, because it says it's available and it's accessible when you're receptive.
Oh yeah, every journey that's in my book people have done without plants, and have had profound experiences. I mean, not everybody every time, but if you prepare yourself, you have the intent, I think there is a spirit world out there that will work with you in healing ways that give you insights to change your story.
Okay, so a little bit more about working with nature. And I'll tell you what, I came home yesterday, and it's spring, so there's all sorts of babies everywhere. And so I've got two or three different sets of baby birds. I've got chickadees and redbirds, and there's a robin out there. But the one thing I really enjoy seeing, and at the same time, you know, they're eating the bird food because they're just little piglets. These are chipmunks. And I drove up, and right there in front of me is this tiny little new guy, and he is absolutely, he's stone, not moving a muscle, barely trying to breathe, no eye blinking. And I walk up to him, and I'm about, oh, maybe 2 feet away. I'm thinking he's going to run at any moment, and he's not running. He's trying to be invisible. He knows his shamanic element, his power is remaining invisible. Well, unfortunately, he's in the middle of a driveway. He's not invisible. Okay. And so I thought, all right, what's going on here? And so I kneel down beside him and I talk to him, and he's, oh my, he is so frightened. And finally I see him shiver. And so I reach very quietly. I get a stick because I know these guys, if they're super frightened and they will bite, and even though he's a baby, I've rescued them back from almost being dead before, where they're frozen solid and they think the dog is going to take the last bite, and they decide to open one eye and realize, okay, it's not me. This person is helping, and they didn't bite. But the other times I've tried to rescue them, I've had my finger gnawed on. So I've learned to appreciate the power of surprise, and he's letting me touch him. And so I just move over to, I run a finger along the back and pat him, and he's so beautiful, he's adorable, he's so vulnerable, he's so frightened. And then he hears a noise and he comes running toward me. So he's come up by my knee, and I have a purse I put on the ground and shielding himself. So here's this big, powerful, frightening being that he's running close to. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, here's this vulnerable little energy. And what can I do? Should I pick him up and save him? Does he know where he's going? Has the dog bite him? Is that why he's so slow and so, frozen and unable to move? But his fear was more about, he hadn't expected the big car, the vibration, all of that energy. It's like us having an encounter with an ET, all right?
Yep.
All of this stuff shifts our reality, and he had not anticipated the arrival of all of this stuff. And finally, my partner came over and he said something, and just the volume of that voice, I saw the shiver go through his body. I petted him a couple more times, and my partner was quiet. And at that point, he walked away, the partner did. And I said a couple more words thinking, well, I hope you're safe. And then he runs off. But it was such a, again, that insight into what's going on in my world of how am I as a creator? How am I when something in my space is vulnerable and needs protected? Do I pick it up and put it somewhere else thinking that's a better solution, resolution? Or do I say, I just need to sit and give you permission to relax and regroup and things will be all right. And I see that as what Source does for me.
Yeah, beautiful. It's always the question, how much do we do and how much do we allow? Part of our changing our story is we have to do things, and sometimes we just have to be very still and allow things to transpire in the time frames that they're supposed to. And to know the difference between when to try to make things happen and when to allow.
Well, and you were talking about holding sacred space.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So for me, I get that with an unseen energy of that holding sacred space for me to do whatever it is I need to do to get myself out of that stew that I put myself into.
Yes, yes, and allow what needed to happen in your encounter.
Yeah, well, at first, making sure that he wasn't wounded or hurt, and that when that was the case, it was just, stiff from fear. OMG!
Yeah.
In the chipmunk world.
Yeah.
I figure he went back and told his companions, whoa, that's who feeds us.
Yeah, right.
That's where the food comes from. It's the mothership. Oh, okay. So in working with your book and your process on Change Your Story, Change Your Life, what's the most, I think, compelling thing that would come from doing this kind of work? And you've had lots of workshops, so you can talk about the people who've experienced some of these transformative exercises. What have you heard in terms of, inspiration?
Well, it doesn't always happen in the same time frame from one person to the next. Some people will say, I can't journey, I can't do this. And those who stay in the process always have something that is very powerful that happens. I've never seen that not be the case. Now, how they work with it and working it into their everyday life is all just individualistic. And some of them do it and have quicker changes than others. Some of them have a positive change, and then it doesn't work, and they get disillusioned. But in every case, they have, those who share it with me, they seem to have a different resiliency and a different ability next time round to shift in the direction they want a little bit more easily, a little bit further. It just makes it easier to get on a new path. And many of them, really, from what they say, are on new paths.
I like the use of the tools because that helps. There are things when I began doing this kind of stuff, I had to use discernment. I had to use ritual, routine, and some form of consistency. Now, I don't always do that now. That was what got me started. Now I kind of just play it by ear and it works itself out. But you talk about the sand painting.
Yep. Here, you're going out in nature and you're taking some life issue and you're depicting it in a circle that you draw in nature. And then you're finding stones or sticks or flowers or leaves that are going to depict the thing that you're working with. Say it's fear of public speaking. And you depict it in this sand painting. And then you visit it every day or two for 4 or 5 days, and maybe a couple times a day. You can shift things around. And by doing it like that, Wendy, you have part of your psyche, part of your story, more visible to you, and then you can gain insights onto it. Say, gee, this it seems very crowded over here. Maybe my fear has something to do with I'm crowded, or maybe these things, which is I have them laid out in the sand painting, I start to say, oh, this is my relationship with somebody, and this is my work relationship. You start to get insights that by putting it out like that, you wouldn't have gotten. But the other thing is, I believe that nature itself is working on those energies. And at the end, I always say, all right, you're ready to put things back exactly the way they were before you started the sand painting. But take the energy that's now in that sand painting around fear and just sweep it with your hand back into your body so that the energy of fear that was there a few days ago has been transformed by the work you've done with it, by the work nature has done with it, and then you sweep it back into your body and see if, in fact, it doesn't live within you differently.
I love it.
It's so experiential. You know, does it feel different? You know, nobody's telling you. You don't have to say to the shaman, oh, I feel better just to make them feel better. If you're really honest with yourself, has it made a difference? If it has, you keep doing it. If it hasn't, you try to figure out maybe I should do it differently, or I don't do it anymore. So it's really...
All right. And we got to go. I'm Dr. Carl Greer, my guest. Change your story, change your life. You are writing it right now. If you go out and paint in the sand, believe me, you'll have a different experience working with sand after you listen to Dr. Greer and read the book. Okay? So thank you for listening, and thank you, Dr. Greer.
Thank you, Wendy, very much.
Have a wonderful day. Remember to think the best thoughts. That's what you're empowering. I'm Wendy Garrett. This is Conscious Living on Empower Radio. Thanks for tagging along.